Well, now that we've kind of gotten that out of the way. Who wants to get enlightened today?
Thanks.
You're good. You're out.
Forget this.
This is how much shit over. Oh, God.
I think this has been the longest it's been since I've had like an enlightenment experience since I started having them.
So you're in a dip.
I'm in a rut. Yeah, right.
You're in an enlightenment rut. The rut. The rut's good because sometimes it means things are scan.
Mm. Oh yeah, many times I feel like I could just go crazy at any moment.
Yep, that's a good one. So you see the.
Oh, man. Here comes bullshit.
What?
I was writing today about.
No, go ahead.
I was saying that I'm introducing some issue that is reasonably profound.
Sure. Yeah.
In the second book I'm working on, the conundrum presented to us by the Eastern belief that only in the human form can we become enlightened. And the other belief is,
I'll just pick one. It doesn't matter.
So there's okay. So, being can become enlightened. On the other hand, the passage I was writing was about the discrepancy between the notion of biological evolution and the notion of even though I'm not getting it right, what I'm saying, I don't remember what I wrote. Mind scrambles up like this.
Sure.
I don't necessarily make sense when I try to, if I haven't memorized it ahead of time, I can't present anything really well.
Good sign.
Enlightenment is coming.
Yeah. You're a mess. Good sign.
It's going to come to me in a minute.
All right, you let us know. we can appreciate that what we refer to as mind, comical and quizzical and capable of daydreaming and projection and presentation, you come to see that the whole movement of mind is alluring you, or alluring awareness into, a scenario. That you have to see it like as absurdly intimately as you possibly can. Or of present experience in inviting your consciousness, your awareness, your capacity to dream, to feel, and to be allured into meaning. And that meaning could be either something that's, novel and perhaps fresh or new, or it could be, of course, the regurgitation of knowledge, conditioning, events and circumstances that you want to work on somehow, either from an emotional, therapeutic, or purely entertaining point of view. So we spend, you could say, most of our, quote, time already downstream of the initial allure, because we're immersed in metaphor and soliloquy and implication and what we think has happened, is happening, will happen, and then we borrow from all the things that we've been exposed to, whether those are secular things or spiritual things, career-based things, gender-based, news, our interests, our relationships, curious circumstances of our lives all contribute to, kind of a conditioned view. So you have this nonstop allure, which is quite magnificent. And we don't, rather than be nourished by the mystique, we move too quickly past that, and then we end up in, right, some kind of conclusion. We're already dwelling too intently, frequently, with too much confidence in content. And we've just walked right past the, you could say, the Divine Mother's, you know, breath. Right past the threshold. We don't even notice it, and then we have become something. Now we're polluted by heard everything that has occurred and every attempt at making sense of it all through whatever reference we use to make sense of things. An iron worker thinks about things differently than a plumber, and a plumber thinks differently about things than a yogi, and right on and on and on and on. Someone that loves kirtan takes a different tune. 100 people can read Nirsagadatta, and you'll have 100 different right conclusions of what it is, what's happening, how they're feeling about it, whether it's true or not true. And that's the whimsical morass of what we refer to as the myth of any kind of reality, let alone a conformist reality. What's going on is the mystique, that's what's real. Everything downstream is contrived.
I find that very... We are invited into experience by the stuff out there.
The stuff out there is created, it's manufactured. The allure is completely, dare I say, free of implication and not the product of stuff. The entire majesty and pathology of creation is downstream of the allure. The allure is not the product of anything. It's acausal. And so are you. Unless you get caught up in story, then you've insisted that you are causal. Yeah. That's awake. That's simple. It's just here. And so one, you could say, stops attempting to derive any meaningful evidence from anything at all. Because you know you're going to end up just downstream of the mystique of allure. You're going to end up in sea realm where you're trying to make sense of things as they concern the myth of yourself. And that's fine. Everybody's doing it. You know, everybody's doing the look much. Come on, baby. Yeah. But doing it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you have to be sanguine with it. Now, since you haven't ever, since nothing actually has actually occurred, all that's going on is the mystique of the allure and the profound sensuality that you could say implies, how consciousness tricks itself into, you know, phenomenal expression, how it tricks itself into temporality. But those are just tricks. All there is the allure. And it's not that the allure is luring you. There's just allure. That's it. Without implication and acausal. And so now you're fucking wiped clean. Really, truly wiped clean of everything and anything. Because all there is this, and this is made out of nothing, acausally occurring, improvisationally, impersonally, and it's just streaming allure. Nothing actually becomes of it. And yet it's so good at tricking itself, namely you, into thinking that, oh yeah, something happened before now. Something is happening now. My opinions tell me so. And therefore it looks like, or I have it on good advice, that something for sure will happen a moment from now, if not a minute, hours, years, lifetimes from now. But no, that is all contrived. That's downstream of the mother's primary invitation, which is jackhead. So once we go looking for explanations, paths, practices, purifications, we're downstream of the allure. We're already fucked in mesmered. And of course, that's how most of us, you know, whether we're secularites, religiousites, atheistites, or Advaitaites, all function. Downstream of allure, we fail to see the, dare I say, incessant and effortless realization that this already and only is.
I feel like the allure is also a part of a story, like maybe the platform, the jumping off platform for the story.
Yes, I'm using the word allure as you know, a thing which is not a thing to feel, which is not necessarily felt. It's the collapse. I'm just using the word allure as a gateway to the collapse of hurry.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. You could use, you know, stale brownie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too.
You really could.
You really could. I know. Yeah. Cool. Because it's the feeling, right? It's the revelatory sovereignty of allure that reveals allure to you, to itself. The word is, you know, not important.
Right, but I mean, it can be confusing if, I mean...
It's only confusing.
It can be, right.
It's only confusing.
If allure is taken to be...
Well, allure or anything, you know, is taken to be.
If you take it...
If you take a thing to be, you're downstream of it.
It's just allure. It's just trying to...
That's all it is. It's allure.
Oh, that's good.
We're fly fishing. Yeah. And now, curiously, what we call consciousness, or one's, you know, sentient capacity for engagement and discovery and, you know, inquiry, whatever, what's marvelous is that though we are snookered and spoofed as easily as we are for whatever this is to come to full full realization without a middleman. Yeah, it can do it. It does. It can do it. It can come to a realization of its own nature, which is the suspension, if not the cessation of the middleman or middle woman. And who knows? Maybe it occurs more frequently than we think. Maybe it doesn't. It's hard to know. When we get, you know, fond of the books and the videos and the life stories of a handful of mutants, well, then we tend to think it's, you know, peculiarly rare. But that's only because we've been indoctrinated, you know, through the Hindu and the Buddhist or the Muslim or the Jain or the Sufi pantheon of magical beings that, you know, could do weird shit. You know. So what? Doesn't matter. Because allure, being exactly this, effervescently and acausally, is all there is. So who cares what magical powers you may or may not have? Who cares, really, whether you can heal people or not? Jesus healed a lot of people. They're all fucking dead. You know? So it's like, yeah. Even to value, this is a fun one too, even to value what you actually are according to any kind of implication that comes from conformist reality, now you're complicit in the myth of whatever idea you think is worth using to value your experience. Oh, I'm good, I'm not good, I'm getting closer, not so close, I'm on a dip, I'm having, you know, frequent interesting experiences, you know, a trade went my way, it didn't go my way. Come on, we're overwhelmed, if not, you know, inundated and overwhelmed by what you can call the fountain of circumstances and events, the profundity of the fountain of circumstances and events, whether it's how you brush your teeth in the morning, which is kind of quiet and intimate and nobody's business, or all the shit that you can see on the front page of, you know, CNN. It's an even playing field. And so mutants are just really not that important. if we place too much faith, too much trust, too much affection in the hands of, you know, a present or ascended mutant, that could be Jesus or Nrsagadatta or, you know, Ramesh or Wayne or, you know, Bart fucking Marshall. If we place too much emphasis on, you know, them as an honorable, sincere, authentic realizer. But still, if we place too much emphasis on them, we're placing too much emphasis on symptoms, on behavior, the hoped for amelioration of my own suffering. And once again, we fail to see that no, Allure is on tap, and it is on tap because it's all there is. So we ignore the you could say firsthand evidence of bona fide realization. You know, anyone will give you a stamp on that, and we end up in fantasy, in time as body self.
The only thing I can say about the yoga path that I've been on for the most part, one cool thing about it, if there are the teachings, the bhakti teachings of the guru and so forth are real important and
yes.
So on and so forth. Got to have a guru and all this stuff. Then you go out to the bookstore and there's all this stuff from the Nrsagadatta.
Yeah.
You realize that behind the scenes is something. But it took me a while to.
Takes a while.
Unlearn the.
You put in as much time and energy and sincerity as you've put in, and fruition is going to come. It's going to come. It's not going to be what perhaps you thought.
It's getting close, huh?
Well,
there's no back. It works if you work it.
There's no close and there's no far. Oh, I said there's no far. Uh-oh. Oh, she's going to appear all, magically all of a sudden. It's like don't say Voldemort. Yes. So, but that is true for any and all of us that have taken up, that have read anything and turned that into a piece of spiritual pride or something that looks like spiritual destination. That's what mind does. It fetishizes whatever it finds. And by fetishizing what it finds, it self-animates. It anthropomorphizes. So we remain in the hamster loop of fetishizing and anthropomorphizing, and then in the sense of being, temporarily behind the eight ball, because we can't unwind the myth of experiencing. Collapse and cessation, that's when you begin to unwind through whatever means, that occurred in the frivolity of your life. You begin to unwind the myth of experiencing, and then you become fascinated with allure. You actually are, you could say, quiescent enough that you can sense and learn from the presence of allure itself, and then self and time start to evaporate. They begin to collapse because you're no longer extruded. And craving also disappears. Because these are all connected. I mean, they're really all synonymous. The certainty of being a body-mind starts to relax. Craving starts to relax. Destination relax. Consequence relax. Strategizing and metaphorizing, anecdotalizing starts to relax. And allure sneaks up on you and reveals itself to itself. And, if you're lucky, you're kind of like, you're there to notice it. Ta-da!
Oh, snake starts to relax. That's.
Yeah.
Starts to loosen up.
Yeah, that's right. And one of many ways to do that is that here's the quality of attention. I mean, purely, this is just attention. This is just animate or even, transcorporeal disembodied attention. It's just attention. It's not made of anything. It's not even quark-based, let alone molecule or atom or photon. It's not. It's the primacy. It's before phenomenon. Before phenomenon, it's the primacy. Is this attention? That's what this is. We're the symptoms, the apparently corporeal symptoms of pure attention. To the extent that we favor the corporeal, well, life is suffering. Everyone fucking knows that. To the extent that that relaxes, then we start to glean or discern, sense and feel, oh shit, oh fuck me, whoa, you're not causal, you're not the consequence of anything, you're not temporal, you're not corporeal, you're not physical, your memories mean nothing. Then what appears to be...
Your life's like watching a movie.
even if you're interested in the movie, leave the theater. Really, leave the theater. You don't even have to watch. Gives a shit. I mean, if you find your life interesting, well, you know, get a Coke and a bag of popcorn and sit through it all. If it's not that interesting, you know, throw the popcorn on the head of the person sitting in front of you and leave the theater.
And ask for a refund.
And then get a refund.
You might
as well try. Yeah. Then go out for Chinese food.
Body tends to call you back.
Well, sure. You got to eat. You got to pee. You know.
Also, pooping. There's a lot of pain.
There can be, and typically there is. Yeah.
But that can be just appearing. Also, that doesn't have to be.
Of course, it is.
Just disappearing.
Yeah, it'd be nice to disappear.
Else.
Hey, you know, again, it's, you know, it's where you could say it's the locus of your abiding. If the locus of one's abiding is strongly connected with, let's say, the physical body and the discomforts that might accompany the physical body, well, you know, then there's a certain tension field, an understandable, forgivable tension field that's present. Because the abiding is associating strongly with the symptoms of the body, namely pain, and pain can't hold your attention. I mean, there's no question about
very
it.
Demanding.
There it is. It's very demanding.
I was really good at ignoring it until recently.
Okay, until it caught up again.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're a poser in a thousand ways, so everything's going to catch up
join
with you.
Club.
You know, join the club. Yeah, right. Poser says what? What? See? Yeah. So allure, without your necessarily taking notice of it, anthropomorphizes a self in the most brilliant, subtle manner. And if you try to investigate it, which is kind of fun because that, in a sense, forces you or invites you to be somewhat present. Because you can't go through the Akashic record of your own imagination to find evidence of anything. You have to be really like, you know, what the fuck is this like right now? Like right now, like right now. What the fuck is this right now? I mean, what is this feeling? What is light? What is sensation? What is sound? What? That's, you know, very present. Deliciously present, perhaps excruciatingly present. Even though there is no such thing as present. It's just... Jesus, I mean, it's disembodied attention. Kind of giving itself a little, you know, a little affection.
Could you say there's no such thing as present? I know it's a referential point, but you're constantly using references. It's just what is, or this, as you say this. Right? It's not... what was or what will be, it's this. Right?
Yeah, and there's no this. Mm-hmm. There isn't.
Then who's talking?
Hey, man, I don't know. I mean, if you want to assign a name to it, knock yourself out, you know. Why even ask whose? Right?
Yeah, but if you're saying not this, That's an assertion of sorts, even though it's a negation.
You know, no, I'm not saying not this, because that would mean this was too solid enough that I had to knot it. Mm-hmm. It can fuck off.
Yeah, that's what I'm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not into not this.
That's what I'm hearing.
I'm just saying it's not this, but not that it's not this. Well, you know what I mean?
I think a knot just got tied.
Exactly. I'm the where. We become easily convinced, let's say, because irrefutability is so sensual, right? It's just like, yikes. I mean, you can't, whoa. And so the woeness of it is like, well, is it the past? Is it the future? Is it the present? If you get all, you know, Ram Dass about it, well, it's, you know, let's hope it's the present. There is no present. You don't actually dwell in the present, abide in the present, function in the present. That's like, huh? So that crafts another sense of temporality, spatiality, corporeality, coordinates that you're existing in.
By saying presence.
That's right.
All that comes along with it.
That's right. Just by suggesting, oh yeah, I'm present. No, you're not.
Yeah, but what if it implies present without body?
Well, see, then it's like one from column A, two from column B. You know, it gets too complicated too quickly, with or without. There's no with or without.
Or without reference.
Well, then that's getting a little more dangerous.
Yeah.
See, presence without reference, is it presence?
Nothing to hold on to.
I don't know.
Presence is a reference.
Yeah, see, presence is a reference.
Circular.
That's right. So, yeah, your spreadsheet goes, you have a circular calculation error, you know? Yeah, that's what this is. It's a fucking circular calculation error. Mitch Kapoor had it right on. Did Lotus 1-2-3. He came to IMS. He was a friend of the IMS community, Mitch Kapoor, from, you know, the founder of Lotus 1-2-3. Spreadsheet.
IMS referring to what?
Insight Meditation Society.
Oh.
Yeah. That's right. The Buddhist prison in Barre, Massachusetts.
Right.
Las cucarachas entran, pero no pueden salir.
Sí.
You see what happens in order to be complacent or confident that you or one or is actually dwelling in the present, you have to believe far too much. And all of that belief is, in a sense, a kind of a frozen presumption. The lucidity that this is, the allure that this is, does not abide in the present. There is no present.
No attention to,
No, that's right. There isn't. Start moving back through this. One's, you could say, disembodied attentivity starts to sense its own demise. Subtler and subtler evidence of what this might or might not be, and starts refuting with no big deal everything that it thought it was. So it's empties and empties and empties and empties, and then you're like, there's no present. Yeah, there's no attention. I mean, I'm fresh out. Fresh out. That's liberation. That's awake. Because now there's no habit of the capacity for dreaming and reference to convince you that this is anything at all. Here we go. For emptiness is form. Form is emptiness. At least from, right, the anecdotal mind, from the metaphorical mind of subjectivity and objectivity. Yeah, it's absolute release. Because, you know, then if you do something about it, or be created some kind of situation or scenario where you don't apply yourself.
I'm interested in learning more about, you know, how the concepts there are maybe the most, typically, and explain this in terms.
Yeah, that's right.
The notion of a singularity or the notion of a black hole.
Yeah.
Without remembering precisely too much about those things, they present sort of, I guess, a sort of cave origin of consciousness, which we're talking about.
Well, sure. I mean, thankfully, you could say, everyone, were there anyone, are free, if there is such a thing, to follow whatever chemistry they're fond of. Like in this example, physics, to give them the thrill that they're interested in having. wants to be thrilled by shit that Rumi said, or shit that Gautama said, Schrodinger said, or what's his name? Krishnamurti's pal. Bohr. No, that's Niels Bohr. I'm a Bohr.
Oh.
You like him.
I know his face.
Yeah, that's right.
Bohm.
Bohm. Bohr, Bohm, Niels, and fuck you. Yeah, so I mean that's fantastic. If you think the physicists are sniffing this out, well then yeah, it would be wise to go see what they've got. But they're not. Really, it gets real close.
It's like, well, for them, it's almost, I guess, sort of an accidental parallel that what they've came up with is a good technical description of what you're trying to describe subjectively.
Like I said, you know, like, sure. I don't know. I mean, if you had a deep conversation with a master woodworker, you know, about the grain and the tree and the processes, you would find incredible liberated poetry there that would, you know, match or surpass what you'll find by, let's say, looking at the nomenclature of the physicists. Right? Anywhere you travel, as long as the traveling is, like Don Juan said, you know, a path with heart. Right, you got skin in the game, and there's passion, and you're looking and you're sensing, and you're, you know, in the company of you know, one or other persons that have some degree of mastery through their life experience and their craft and their artistry and their own passion. You'll find the liberation there in completely friendly or unfriendly vocabulary. Because of the allure it can do and obviously does anything. Comes up with any nomenclature that you could say it wishes to. If one kind of vocabulary turns me on, go there. And then there's also the you know, the joke. You see the joke. You see that what allure does is allure. And that means it engages its own, you know, metabolic potency in anecdote, metaphor, language and symbol systems, discovery, time, comparison, implication. You know, wow, it's really, really good. It's really, really, really good at convincing itself of a world in which you or I am dwelling. Profoundly good at it. And that's fascinating. Just to see that is like, oh, I'm humbled. I mean, I'm joyful. I'm ecstatic. Just to see what allure is capable of. It's just like, oh, goodness. And that's a different kind of, an appreciation than being knee deep in the implication of allure. Yeah, and here we are. You're always. You're never not right here in the lap of allure. So there's not far to go. This begins by being liberated. Then it convinces itself, maybe not. And then we go in search of, you know, symptoms and ratifications of one kind or another to get back to a thing that we could never possibly have left. Because we got jammed, was stuck under the influence of content and context. And we're able to convince ourselves, again, impersonally and without any effort, that, oh yeah, this is me, the human, in time space with, you know, a handful of disappointment and perhaps physical pain.
Handful.
You got, right.
What comes first then?
What comes before this?
Well,
this?
Something made this sensory package that's interfacing.
If you want to anthropomorphize it, yeah. Maybe something didn't. Maybe there is no something.
Yeah, but what goes well?
What goes?
Huh.
You just did. Answer solved.
Yeah, but before that.
And before that.
What set it up?
And before that. And before that. You can...
I know, it's an endless...
Well, if you want to start a new religion, and I'm happy to join it, you let me know what started it, and I'll say, yeah, that's exactly right. Now we have a new religion. Or you can agree with one of the existing religions.
I think the observer is the issue, and it's the subjectification of... there is no subject, but when you claim to have an observer, bam.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the pride of the observer makes it appear as if, you know, your questions are good ones.
And it can only be an observer if there's a claim of differentiation in the first place.
All right. Well, that's, you know, sure, that's plausible. It might not be absolutely true, because even that becomes...
Well, nothing I say can be absolutely
true. You're not alone. So, you're not the only one in the room who's a liar.
Another word for ownership.
If there's an owner, then you've created everything right there. And the observer...
Well, what's fun about the engaging with present experience is using, let's say, language and discovery to, you could say, out the allure. Yeah. For fun, one looks at allure to see whether there you can find any causal elements, any causal evidence. And then allure is like, oh, keep looking, because I will give you causal evidence faster than you can say, and then you're downstream of the allure. You see, that's how good it is. If there's a mechanism, the mechanism is this is exactly this, and that's that. This is this, and that's that. But we want to like figure out, well, I'm having experiences and feelings, and I'm not enlightened, and I'd like to be, and you know, but that's how it ensnares itself. It animates itself instantaneously. And so then you're downstream of the allure again. Downstream.
The difficulty I'm experiencing, I listen to stuff like this or I read stuff like this, and it's like my mind is just 10 steps behind, or just one step behind, following what's being said. Can't quite catch up.
That's not your difficulty.
It's a win.
That's a win.
Yeah, and actually just let it keep going further and further fucking back.
You want to go back. You don't want to catch up with this, because the implication of catching up with this is that means that one has constructed, at least temporarily, a feasible cosmology. No. You don't want to land in a feasible cosmology, because then you'll be an object again. So that's a win. This keeps you fall backwards over the cliff. You don't ever develop, and you stop even trying to develop.
You fall backwards over the cliff.
Yeah, you fall backwards over the cliff, not forwards, because it sneaks up on you from behind. Yeah. If you come to a cliff's edge, turn around and then go off. Go off backwards.
It's the fall of faith instead of the leap of faith.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's all felt. One of the let's say aspects of the yoga, right, as a way of engagement in a certain kind of conversation, part of the yoga is exactly inviting over and over again for what we refer to as the mind, which is just the urgency of some kind of anthropomorphication or cosmology. We continue to invite that to just relax, to not assign anything to anything. Then as you're free of assignment, and that's this, free of assignment. So to the extent that there's a yoga or a practice or a utility in engaging in the kinds of conversations that we have, it's that. things, you know, that are kind of like etheric, but really it's like you just completely relax without effort or commitment or vow from reference. And you're released from, one is released from the habit or the compulsion to assert and then dwell as a product of some kind of cosmology.
I'm having a lot of fun reading this marvelous book written by this woman who I was an acquaintance of in Atlanta, Georgia, about 30, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
She's the last word on the larger tradition of Western esotericism, all these levels and the nine orders of angels and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
so much fun, all so gorgeous and beautiful and elaborate,
oh, yeah.
and historical and
yeah.
extraterrestrials. The whole thing, ascended message, it's so
yeah.
cool.
Yeah,
all is. These great pictures of all yes. the different planes that she's been on.
Yeah.
Beautiful things she's seen.
That's right.
And then to come here, naked truth.
Well, that's right.
I'm sorry to respect you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're the arbiter. You're the chooser. You're the decider. Things land in you a certain way. They tickle your consciousness or awareness a certain way. Reality is felt. If there is phenomenal expression, and why refuse it? Why refute it? Well, it's felt. We're not talking about sentimentality. Just the irrefutability of being is felt. So if something referred to, let's say, as naked truth, you know, penetrates, it's like, oh, I like that. I like hearing that. I like what that reveals to me. And that doesn't have to be at odds with or mutually exclusive from a fecund cosmology of auras and layers and angels and beautiful vistas. They're the same. If, I would say, we become too enamored of, and understandably enamored of, supernatural sensation or supernatural vision or cities of one kind or another, well, then, you know, we're in a lure. Even if that allure is, you know, a little more subtle than, let's say, the typical agita that we live in. Yeah. That's why it's always, you know, is suggest, hey, just walk it back, walk it back, walk it back, walk it back. Get behind the genesis of anthropomorphization. And to do that, and one decides whether that's valuable or not to you. I don't know. But if it's valuable to do that, then the symptoms of allure, the mythos of allure is forfeited. Yeah, you forfeit it. Because let's just say the urgency, the deep urgency, my value proposition is unencumbrance. Unencumbrance beats beautiful vistas every day, mm-hmm. day after day, all day long. Mm-hmm. If you agree with that, you know, I'm not saying it's true. I'll say it, and I'll say it again, but that doesn't mean it's true. It has to be true for you, if it's true for you. Unencumbrance beats beautiful vistas every single time.
Beautiful vistas is it has to be a representation of unencumbered, because unencumbered it is beauty.
Yeah, there's no real quarrel between
if
them.
Anything is anything,
right,
then it has to
be beautiful.
It has to be.
Warning.
Warning.
You're entering a circular.
Warning, you're about to stumble on great beauty. Stand back.
I feel like beauty, and I've been saying a lot of my feelings, I feel like beauty is beauty because it's expressing what is inexpressible. That's why it's beautiful.
Okay. If it's anything at all. Beauty can just be, yeah, not that.
I think I finally remembered the conundrum that I came in.
All right.
Came into the room.
All right. Load the conundrum.
The question is whether it's one of those philosophical issues that is pertinent to understanding enlightenment. I think the notion that can other animal species be enlightened?
Right.
Plus the notion that only man is capable of enlightenment.
Sure. Yeah.
And so did we, if we did evolve from other creatures, then at what point
must
the cutoff happen? And we become a separate species, which is unique in its abilities.
Nice.
But you have to define it.
So where
in the record, right, the biological mutative record,
did
the human being become capable of enlightenment?
Right.
Yeah. But when did the Homo sapiens step up to the plate?
Yeah, and of course that's within the framework of space and time.
Of course it is.
But for understanding of, I don't know, it's a fascinating thing. I've never quite. There are some people who think that we were seeded from the stars, you know, all that sort of thing.
Well, the fun thing is that, I mean, borrowing from physics as a field of poetry. Is present experience downstream of a inflation event, and therefore this is a physical universe that prior to that inflation event was anybody's guess, but by going Big Bang on this, the inflation event was seminal. And therefore, everything has come downstream of that seminal event. Then you have all kinds of Darwinian propositions, whether those are, you know, whether we're star children, which, of course, even the physicists say, yeah, definitely we're star children.
Famous Carl Sagan line, we're all made of star stuff.
Okay.
Right? Well, that's, yeah, right.
And you'll find interesting Genesis scenarios in whatever culture you might be curious to stumble into, and find poetic metaphors there, whether it's turtles all the way down, or we're living on the back of a hippopotamus, or
whatever we like,
whatever
stars
our friends
sound really cool, but if you're like, oh, you're all made of poo, it's like,
yeah, whatever our star group friends nearby, it's like crystal skulls and unconditional love. You're like, count me in. Care for a stale cupcake? That's all we got.
That's bad.
So you see, once again, you jump past the liberating sovereignty of allure into, right, a cosmology story, into a Darwinian scape, which is causal, which is fine. I mean, yeah, okay. I'm not. I don't know anything. I don't know whether there was a Big Bang or there wasn't a Big Bang. I really don't, nor do I care much. But you can see, if you're, let's say, an investigator of consciousness, you can see what the presumption of an inflation event creates. Whereas this is absolutely acausal. Right now, completely acausal. It's dreaming itself out of nothing at all, through countless waveforms and perturbations of apparent implication, apparent sensuality.
So no matter what we grab, it'll lead us back to nothing.
That's right. If you're good, yeah. If you choke it to death, it'll take you to nothing. Mm-hmm. That's the similar, let's say, evocation of, yeah, past, sure, present, future, sure, present, not even. Yeah, because in order for there to be a present that you imagine you're occupying, you have to freeze it. long enough to say, oh, I'm here now, but you can't ever be here now for long enough to be here now. Mm-hmm. So fuck you, you know, be here now. Mm-hmm. And yet Paul Hederman likes to say, well, it's stupid to give people advice to be here now. Where else could you be? I mean, that makes sense, too. But guess what? It's not true.
Right, because it's still self-referential.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. You're still
questioning.
That's right. You're still leaning on some kind of, you know, referentiality to make a claim about the otherwise evaporative and refreshing nature of what we call present experience. You can't stay in a moment or a place or a time long enough to make a claim. That's the mystique of allure. Like, holy shit. It doesn't stop. It doesn't pause. It doesn't become anything. It never was anything. There is no implication. You wiped clean and, oh my goodness. I had no idea that this was nothing at all. You know, that doesn't mean, you know, $50,000 is going to show up in your bank account. If it does, fantastic. Or the opposite, you get drained. Really drained. That's God's big joke. You know, that's why the comment about the rich man and the eye of the needle, right? God's big joke was like, oh, you got something, you're made of something. You're on a pilgrimage, right? You're on a journey? No, you're not. This isn't anything. And then you're really lucky because, you know, you're totally useless. You can't help anybody with anything. So you're off the hook. In terms of being efficacious? You know, you want efficacious? Go see Byron Katie. She'll steal your money, you'll still end up with nothing.
Get worksheets.
You'll get worksheets. It's really nice to fail at everything and no longer be efficacious. So beautiful.
See, beauty.
See, yeah, well, sure. I failed at everything, I am useless. Yeah.
One thing I found interesting is that, you know, it is said, or I've heard, that, you know, if you reach it, you should let me 5 minutes before death or 50 years before death.
Mm.
It doesn't matter because you've transcended space and time. So in eternity, a grain of sand, an hour, what was that line from William Blake? You know?
Yeah.
If I'm going to wake up, I want to wake up relatively soon so I can have some fun for a while. Enjoy myself for a while.
Yeah, you're a greedy fuck just like everybody else.
Join the club.
What that does, I mean, I hear you. I mean, I get it. But you see, in order to have the wise preference that you'd be better off waking up sooner than later, you're already downstream of allure. You've already presumed that you're not awake. You've already presumed that you know what your experience is. And that you're absolutely assured that you're in a condition that's less than optimal, let's say. And then having convinced yourself somewhat surreptitiously that you're in a condition and that condition is less than optimal, well, then naturally you'd want to wake up sooner than later. But you're too late, like Carl Renz says. You're always too late because you're downstream of the of you're downstream of liberation.
And you're living kind of in a virtual linearity.
Oh yeah. All these things that you or one glues together, you know, with Simian glue, are not true. That's why the encouragement, let's say, the invitation to go right into the mystique of the lure. Then you'll make no conclusion about yourself being in a certain kind of condition, which you assert because of, you know, what you think your experience was and is. You don't know what your experience was, and you certainly don't know what it is. The only way that you can self-accuse of being unenlightened is that you know what your experience was, and then that you know what it is, and it's less than optimal according to some idea that you have.
It's so convoluted.
It's so convoluted.
It's going to be this cataclysmic moment where you just explode.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe, maybe not. It's already done. It's already done. We just suffer from the habit of being able to convince ourselves over and over again of what we think this is. And therefore, what might happen, hopefully happen, could happen between now, where I think I am something, to the moments from now, where perhaps enlightenment will, you know, visit upon me. You're just fucking dreaming. And I'm not singling you out. That's what this does. That's what it does. It is smarter than you at convincing itself that it's not enlightened. You're the last to know. See that. See how smart it is at convincing itself that it's not enlightened. Whew, boy. Then pranam. Really. Just ashtanga pranama. Right on the ground. Like, oh. That's the beauty. See the beauty of that. And then the all of the, you could say, calories and energy that are wasted on imagining how I can get enlightened sooner than later just dissipate instantaneously. And it's not because you've become enlightened, because that's a fucking myth. If anything changes at all, it's the loyalty that one gives to being downstream of allure, living referentially. And here you go. You can live from moment to moment to refresh. It's like, you know, where's the fork in the road? Ongoing, ongoing, ongoing. The fork in the road is never in the future. It's never in the past. It's always just a fork in the road. Do you want to live downstream of allure, therefore referentially, temporally, or not? And the or not, you can't really say much about. Because the collapse of content and the collapse of context leaves you useless, without efficacy. And that might include, like, oh yeah, I used to think it'd be nice to wake up, like, you know, sooner than later, but I don't think about that anymore. You see the seeds of craving that one wants to have a future experience. That's the myth of being unenlightened, is the craving for future experience should be of a certain quality according to my imagination. Whew, boy, good luck with that. See that what's needed is the collapse of that. At right about here.
Look, it's just like an addiction to storytelling.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
Stories are cool. Angels and fucking levels and, you know what I mean? It's exciting. You get some adrenaline from it.
Yes, why not? That's right. By hanging out in this curious circle, you know, voluntarily, without, you know, being hypnotized or anything, we get to see some of the inertia of our own thinking, the inertia of our own anticipation. And by seeing it conversationally, because, you know, you can sit on a fucking cushion alone or with a bunch of people and you can just fucking hide out forever. But conversationally, it raises the bar on the intimacy and the immediacy of present experience. And so then as we come up with, you know, soliloquies and stories about, wouldn't it be great if, then you can see, like, oh man, that's zero. It's kind of easy to convince oneself in the privacy of one's own meditation, whether in a group or privately, of all the stuff that goes on in mind that, you know, that seduces us. But to do it kind of out loud and conversationally, it's like, whoa, busted. And to some, that's a little intimidating. To others, it's like, yeah, baby. I gotta bust this. Yeah, and it's not personal, you know. There's no value judgment, because mind is mind. It's not your mind or your mind or your mind or my mind. It's like, this is fucking insane. This is the nature of allure, that it metaphorizes, that it uses, you know, symbols and nomenclature to refer to reality secondhand, and it anthropomorphizes instantaneously. And now you're a subject. You're in a field of objects. You're toast. And there's nothing wrong with it necessarily. I mean, if you want to play the socio-political game that human beings, Homo sapiens, being so profoundly stupid and naive, bring themselves to extinction, it's like, you know, oops. So you can play it that way, but yeah, not necessary. One doesn't need to be motivated, let's say, by avoiding extinction to wake up. But
the mystery, I guess, for me is, well, the greatest, most profound desire, I guess, it's the lack of desire for anything in the world.
There you go.
But it's a longing for something that you can't define or put your finger on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and
right.
I still like the idea that of like the 100th monkey, all that sort of thing, you know.
Sure.
We can enlighten as a phase transition.
Yes.
A lot of other people can get it without even trying.
Yep.
Because the merits are from previous lifetime. The whole Eastern cosmology.
Fine. You know? Yeah. All right. Well, I understand the investment and you know, the time and sincerity it takes to make that investment. And I also understand, you know, the implication of having made the investment, because you, like any of us, commit to a certain cosmology, and then we become loyal to that cosmology. We think that it's binding, and it's not. None of that stuff is true or real. None of it. I mean, zero. Fucking zero. But they're all forms, you know, of profound poetry. Because that's what this is. It's a field of poetry. It's a poetic field. Sensuality is poetry, and sensoriality, and spirituality, and cosmologies, and time and space and experience and universe and galaxies and planet and curious phenomena. You know, it's pure poetry. I mean, it's just like, oh God, this rocks. But once we fetishize it or become interested in certain elements to the exclusion of other elements, and then create cosmology, which is really to create a giant citadel of, you know, what's not possible, then now you're just, you know, you're an idolater. Then that's cool too. I mean, what is self but a form of idolatry? What is truth but a form of idolatry? What is my convincing myself that I'm not enlightened but a form of idolatry? Or having some ideas about the, you know, the chances of my becoming enlightened. It's just more idolatry.
It's interesting that it always seems to go the opposite. It's never like everyone's enlightened. Like, it's always kind of somewhat negative in a certain weird, you know, like you're not there and you have to get there, and you're like Christian, you know, you're a sinner, and, you know.
Yep, that's right.
Bad, you have to do things.
Yeah.
Maybe one day if you're lucky.
All of those wonderful poetic formulations are all lies. That doesn't mean they set out to say, oh, let's tell some good lies. It's just the nature of this to, right, use language, symbols, and reference, space, time, implication, sensuality, to construct what appears to be a causal chain of events, as in, you know, karma. And you can find plenty of evidence for, you know, karma in all the ways you can look at the implication of that word. You can even find, you know, evidence for people that have had been reincarnated and know things about things that they shouldn't know about if they were really freshly born. It happens all the time. People show up with, like, the most profound insights into where hidden things are and da-da-da-da-da, and there's just no way they should have that innate intelligence. And so, you know, reincarnation in some cases makes perfect sense. That some kind of durability from, you know, body to body, some subtle durability.
Recycling.
Akashic memory from body to body perhaps persists. And occasionally people show up that have unmistakable prior life experiences. Unmistakable. You're like, oh, cool. I am. I know. I'm still trying to figure out pretty much everything. I'm completely unremarkable. I mean, you know. Completely unremarkable. You see, the relaxation of symbols and nomenclature, implication, space-time, magnificent events, boy, it really cleans your clock. It does. And it's, you could say it's worth giving some attention to that part of the adventure to see just how deeply it can clean your clock. And then what you find there. Might find that you have become unwittingly emptied of the impulse to live metaphorically. Then you're free. Which has always been the case. May as well start now. You know, there's no point in waiting around for an event. There's no event. This is what it is right about now. Just here. Just this. And it turns out to be nothing at all, so you don't have to fuss about it. In terms of coming up with, you know, a winning cosmology that you prove over the course of a lifetime or a half a dozen lifetimes. You don't need to prove anything. And yet this is still exactly what it is, if it were anything. And thank God it's not. So you fall backwards over the cliff. You empty out. It's not that you ever satisfy the urgency for discovery, the urgency for novelty, or the urgency for cosmology. You just fall backwards over the cliff. You're emptied out.
You can sneak up on it in a sense.
It sneaks up on you. It always is. Our refusal of it is hubris. Okay. It's good. It's better than we are. It's smarter. You know? It's like you wake up when this is done fucking with you, not when you're done fucking with it. Really? Yeah. When it's done fucking with you, it says, this guy's useless. Let him off the hook. But as long as it finds, you know, some kind of sensuality or interest still residing in you, it's just going to wipe the floor with your face. As long as there's an opportunity for this divinity to find some remnant of guile, let's say, in you, that's it. Your face is going to be used to clean the floor. You could say, you know, suffering and disappointment, yogas of various kinds, purifications, if you like those, whatever it takes, for this to just keep emptying of obligation, of responsibility, of choice, of decision, of anything at all. He's just like, I don't see it. I don't see it. I don't see it. And the consciousness is like, I'm not getting any mileage out of her. She's fucking useless. And leaves you alone.
Too many holes in the rag.
Yeah, really. Yeah, this rag is disposable. You become a disposable rag, and consciousness is no longer interested in you because you're just too fucking porous. Boom. Nothing. Ease of being. And that's always, I mean, always available, because that's always what this is. So it's not like one has to pass through any particular cosmology or circumstances and events, though it can appear that way, for fruition to be what this already is. So it's the emptying of hubris, not the discovery of working cosmology. And then everyone can just fuck off. And the unencumbrance is, that's unmistakable. We don't really want to be the product of belief. Somebody else's or our own. We don't want to be the product of a working cosmology. Yeah, it's horrible. Horrible. Yeah. One doesn't want to be burdened or encumbered by mythology of any kind.
A mini form of totalitarianism in a strange
way. Indeed it is. That's why, arguably, what we see is totalitarianism on the socio-political landscape is out of control, because really we're all suffering, you could say, privately from their own form of authoritarianism. Yeah. And what's fun is, you know, we typically
always suffer from forms of authoritarianism, but the preponderance of some of them are causing the socio-political manifestation to seem like it's out of control.
Yes. Yeah. 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 See, looking for evidence is one of many ways that this allure ensnares itself. You go looking for evidence. Right? So where do you turn for evidence? My mind, thought, things I've read, knowledge, sensuality, you know, remarkable vistas, non-remarkable vistas. Where do you go looking for evidence? Well, either etherically in mind, or let's say demonstrably in whatever presence might be. And guess what? If you go looking for evidence, what are you going to find? Evidence. If you go looking for evidence, you're going to find some. What you make of the evidence is according to your, you know, conditioning and narrative and the way you feel right about then when you're making sense of it.
One passage from the Sargadha that really got me in terms of describing what this thing must be like. It said, you don't move. Everything moves through you. Imagine going to New spending a week in New York City. You got to take the bus there and
yes.
Getting a cab and go to your hotel room and
yeah.
go see Times Square and go see Phantom of the Opera, whatever you do.
Yes.
It's all happening. You're just motionless and like Aristotle's prima mobile motum.
You know, uh-huh.
The first mover unmoved. That's it. That's what I got out of reading one of these passages at one point.
Yes, that's right. That the plausible metaphor is, well, Jeff Foster calls it life without a center. Right? Yeah, consciousness has left you alone because you've become too porous and you can no longer sop up its spills.
Too porous, it's emptying out.
Yeah. There's not enough. There's not enough. You've become threadbare. You're threadbare. You can't hold it. You can't hold a charge. There's no point using a completely dilapidated, torn apart paper towel to wipe up a spill. That's what you become. Bounty.
Or a fully saturated one, either way.
Fully saturated with my own pride. That's right. Yeah. So let's say one has a strong and thoughtful mind and enjoys, right, cosmology and metaphors and implications. So then that becomes, part of the way that one, let's say, navigates or weaves through the morass of the myth of enlightenment. Use whatever resources you have that you're made of, to kind of adapt or adopt to the quest at hand. Yeah. And so it becomes a little challenging that if you have a strong and imaginative mind and are fond of cosmologies and implications and getting into the nuance of things, it's not so easy to relinquish that proclivity, that strength, and just go into total stupidity, which is more sensual. It's more diffuse. You feel this. For some, it's easy. For feelers and auditory types, synesthesiasts, right? They have feel this. Are you kidding? I'm I'm going to fall over. I feel this. And some of us that have a more, metaphorical allure, it's challenging to move from mental competence to synesthesic diffusion. Yeah. But that's handy. Comes in handy. Shifting the bias of present experience from reference and nomenclature, which is time, which is self, to non-dual immediacy, which doesn't process. Yeah. Non-dual immediacy doesn't process, and that's what this is appearing and being felt absolutely non-dually, liberatedly. But then attendant to that is the capacity for dreaming and narrative and process and metaphor and the extrusion of, space, time, and self. All right. Yeah, you can run around, in a diaper and yell, "I am that." That's cool. Or not.
Were you mixing Ramana and Sargadana there?
I was. Yeah. Run around in a diaper and yell, "I am that." Or who am I?
While smoking beedies and petting cows.
While smoking beedies, petting cows, and yelling, "Lakshmi, why hast thou forsaken me?"
Might as well just throw them all in there.
Yeah, might as well just. Are we willing to abandon the passion and pathos of our own being? To take the risk to discover absolute porosity? Or am I still sufficiently fond of whatever I take myself to be to drag it along for the ride? That's all. As long as I'm still sufficiently fond of who I take myself to be to drag it myself along for the ride, well, then the frustration of the presumption of unenlightenment is likely to linger. Go figure. If and when we start getting jiggy with absolute porosity and uselessness, well, you could say more demonstrative evidence of not knowing anything about anything reveals itself. And you're like, wow, the fuck? And you don't make any claim about it. Why would you make a claim about it? You only make claims about shit if you think you're in a condition or were once in one and now you're not in one. But if you were once in one and you're no longer in one, you don't make a claim about anything. You know, call me what you will. You can call me Ray. You can call me Dave. Don't look for evidence in present experience of any for anything. If you look for evidence, you'll find it. If you find it yourself, you're fucked. You're instantly fucked. How lightly can one simply chill the fuck out and not even look for evidence of any condition in present experience? So you're not making any accusation. Not about yourself, not about anything. If you're not making any accusation, well, I'm sorry, enlightened, not enlightened? But what? That's a different kind of, let's just say, texture or insight than presuming that I'm not enlightened and by hook or crook I will become enlightened sooner to now than my death. But that, what? It just stops making sense. Really, genuinely stops making sense. Not just because, you know, I've replaced one sticky note with another sticky note. But it's like, huh? What?
And burn was in it something.
Yeah, and yes, and the release from insisting upon finding evidence in present experience for anything at all is a very profound release. It's like, who cares what the evidence field is appearing to show, or even how it's felt by me, or even how I'm thinking about it. It's not important how the evidence field is demonstrating or how you think or feel about it, because you're still then looking for evidence to come up with, right, an accusation. Stop looking for evidence and make no accusations. Then convince yourself of whatever you want to convince yourself of. And you won't be able to. That could smell like freedom.
Uh, 200 viewers, huh? That's cool.
Down to one.
People in there talking about.
I don't know.
There's one person talking to themselves.
There's a few people chatting it up.
All the time.
One viewer, a few people chatted it up. Yeah, this thing's taking off, man.
What the hell are you talking about?
Watch out for the Night Sky song. It's just going to come to a city near you.
I have a Panera Bread gift card. I have to.
All right, nice.
I have to go to an outlet sometime.
Yeah. This is easy because it's kind of lighthearted, really. You don't have to defend anything.
No one gives a shit about you.
Nobody gives a shit. Nothing happens. Nothing needs to. You don't have to walk away saying, hey, that was a great meeting. You're like, what the fuck was that? Why did I make the drive to go to that? God, I got to talk to my therapist. This is stupid.
What a waste of time.
What a fucking waste of time.
You said to me, what did you talk about?
Uh-huh. Who asked?
It's the same thing.
Yeah, the same thing. I can't remember.
When Tina was there.
Oh, Tina, yeah. Right, Tina wanted to know. What was the content of your conversation? Mm-hmm. Toe jam.
Toe jam.
Basically, you said, we'll take this and smash it.
Yeah.
Over and over, yeah.
Well, you know, participating in voluntary non-referentiality is, I would say, well, at least for me, it's quite scintillating.
Yeah, it seems to unravel something in my complex brain,
mm-hmm.
mind,
whatever. Yeah.
that likes weaving things.
Yeah, that's right. You're a weaver. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, I mean, I'm not above or below it or to the left or the right of it. I mean, I'm weaving too, in a sense, just kind of free associating, right, in the midst of this kind of curious plasma. Mm-hmm. Just not making anything definitive, right?
Well, you weave a little and then you pull one of the threads out.
Yeah, that's right. Weave the rug and throw it into the fire. Yeah. Revelation is funny, and the so-called absence of revelation is likewise funny. Is this revelation or not? Right? Is it? Is this revelation or not?
What is it revealing?
I don't know.
For it to be revelation, it would have to sort of revel in something, or you would have to revel in something.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, let's see, the ultimate something.
Yeah, okay, well, you know, there's a vote for the ultimate something.
I vote for the everything.
I vote for everything.
Something versus the nothing.
See, it's, how does this convince itself that this isn't revelation?
Why don't you guys mud wrestle?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, really, how does this convince itself that this is not revelation? But that's basically what we're doing if I self-accuse that I'm less than enlightened. I'm saying, yeah, this is not revelation. I'm in a state. I'm in a condition. I'm without, I seem to be without the, you know, lucidity or whatever word you might give to it that would provide you with the evidence that you're looking for signs of realization. And that remarkable capacity to decide somehow that this is not revelatory is what keeps us under the influence of the myth of being something less than, call it, realized.
If you just take that last sentence and study it for the next 10 years, I don't think I'd be able to follow the convolutions.
Yeah, no, they're not followable. And they're ongoing. It's not like this has a finite Pandora's box of convolutions. It's infinite, infinitely convoluted, on demand, improvisationally, faster than I am, faster than you are. That's how good it is. You're like, whoa, I surrender. I'll put down your weapons. Put down your shields. It's just too good. But that's the nature of nothing. Nothing is really, really good at appearing to be something. Faster than we can track it referentially. And the appreciation of that, the revelation that this is revelatory, is like, whoa, I stand down. I take my king and I tip it over. Checkmate. I resign. Nice. Checkmate's great. It's just great.
That's his first move.
Right? Yeah, checkmate. I'm out. just put your pinky on the king and go, I resign. I'm out.
I want to play that guy.
Yeah, really. Checkmate. Checkmate at every moment. I mean, that's freedom. You want liberation? Checkmate at every moment. Oh. Taken off the board. Oh. Nice. Just taken off the board.
It's kind of funny, though. If you look at the history of kings, kings only came into occupation when there was some sort of chaos that wanted some sort of order.
Uh-huh.
And then once things were kind of tuned, then the king stepped down and
mm-hmm.
had no job. Until the king decided he wanted a perpetual one.
Yeah, that's right. I like this job.
And installed a...
It is good to be king.
A monarchy.
Well, that's right. I mean, all that stuff that, you know, may have occurred in the history of Homo sapiens is You know, it's like, wow. Metaphorically, it makes perfect sense to the way that I find myself being and behaving. I'm the monarch. I'm the chaos. I'm the, you know, solver of the chaos. I'm the whatever. I'm the tax man.
Right. Yeah.
I'm the oppressed.
It feels like it has to bring order to something.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'm here. I'm in charge. Are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And follow this. Okay, I'm going to follow myself to bed.
All right, then. It's good to see you. Feel what it feels like to be free from reference. Repeat. Get used to it.
Feel what it feels like to be free from reference. Peter Puppet picked a peck of peppers.
Because it's palpable. See, we're not relying on mind and symbology to provide us with evidence, you know, or equations. No, that's gone. Just boom, instantaneously gone. What remains? Oh, feeling. Feeling only. And that feeling is without reference.
Not made of anything that came before it.
Absolutely, sir. Yeah. I mean, that's scary good. It came before. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Improvisational and without reliance on any, let's say, previous existence. This is not downstream of the Big Bang. It's just not.